Blog Talk Radio.
Turnbuckle Terminal fans, welcome to the show. Sign Guy and QT with you here on another Sunday. Hope everyone is continuing to be safe out there. And I want to bring our guest today on right away. We are joined by the Boogie Woogie Boy, Gary Valiant. Sir, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you, sir. Nice to have. Thank you for having me, sir.
Well, since it's your first time on our show, we're going to give you the traditional first-timer's question to start. What led to you getting into the business of professional wrestling?
My father, the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant, and Jackie Fargo.
Now, obviously, those two men are absolute legends in the business, and they blazed their own trails, of course. When did you know that you wanted to go down a similar path?
I guess when I was about 9 or 10, because I really, you know, didn't get to see him a lot because he was on the road. But when I was old enough to go with him, and I just, you know, all them people that showed up at the shows and packed the Mid-South Coliseum out and Georgia Dome, and just everywhere you went, it was like, he was treated like a star, and I was amazed by that. And then I was just amazed the way Jackie Fargo just had the people in the palm of his hands. Whatever he done, it didn't matter what he done, the people just popped on it. And it just then I knew this is what I wanted to do, because I've always, you know, wanted to act like a fool and just be silly and goofy and make people laugh, and I think that's what got me. Just seeing all the people every building you went to, it was just packed out, and I just thought that was just super cool.
You've been wrestling for a while now, of course, and I'm sure you've seen crowds of all kinds of sizes. What would you say has been the biggest crowd that you've wrestled in front of so far?
I would probably say 70,000-80,000 people. Because I started in 1989, a guy named Bill Dundee, the superstar Bill Dundee. Actually, my dad was in Memphis. They bought him a house. Jerry Jarrett bought him a house in Memphis. He stayed for 6 months and he went back because he got a better deal for Bill Watts. So I stayed, and Bill took me in and trained me. I started in 89, and then by 1992, I get a phone call to work for the WWF. And I knew that would have been a great opportunity just to, you know, I knew I had to pay my dues. I knew I had to, I knew I was going to, you know, have to do what they asked me to do. And I didn't mind that, because I was paying my dues to guys that's been around. And so I went to WWF and changed my name to Gary Scott. And then because I didn't want to go to WWE and destroy my father's name that he worked so hard for. So I was there from 1992 to 99. And talking about the experience I had there, it was amazing. Guys like The Undertaker, Owen Hart, that really helped the younger guys out, you know, and seeing The Undertaker was right out of Tennessee because he just left Memphis not too long after I got there, as me and Mark Callis, and so he wasn't probably 20 miles from me in Nashville. So and then Jeff Jarrett really stepped up, and he got me a bunch of his wrestling gear. When he got called up to WWE, they changed his name to Double J, and his wife at the time, Jill, made all of his gear. So he changed all of his gear to all the suspenders and done the cowboy hat and all that. And he says, "Hey, if you want my gear, so you don't have to go out and spend a bunch of money." He says, "If you want to meet me, come and get it." And I thought that was really cool. And the guys really took care of me, and I really appreciate that today.
Now, when you were getting started in your career, and even still up to this day, really, Pro Wrestling Illustrated has been the biggest magazine for pro wrestling, and a lot of people always had a goal of seeing their name in the pages of PWI. When you were getting started, was it something of a goal to get your name in the magazine, or was that something you didn't really give much thought about?
Well, I didn't give much thought about it for the simple fact because I knew that at the time they were doing all that, I was still kind of young, and I didn't think they would really give me a look. But matter of fact, I'm going to walk. I'm walking and talking. I'm going to walk down into my gym, and I got some magazines actually where they put me, wrote some things in the magazine about me. I think in like 93 and 94. And I thought that was kind of cool.
Now, one of the things that PWI has been doing for about the last 30 years is the annual PWI 500, where they rank the top 500 wrestlers in the world in a given year. A lot of wrestlers have always made it a career goal to get on that list. Was the PWI 500 something that you ever gave consideration to, or was it something that if it happened, it happened?
I think I was always told if it happened, it happened. You know, I was always got told that, you know, don't worry about what people wrote. Don't worry about what people put in the magazines. Just make sure that you go out there and you entertain the people that bought a ticket. That was our job. You know, just like when I got started, they told me not to worry about having any titles. Don't worry about the win and loss records. And just worry about telling a story and making the people believe what you was doing. And that stuck in my mind the whole time. You know, like today, you know, I go out and I dance in the crowd and I try to kiss the oldest woman I could find, you know, because you give her attention, then everybody's going to, you know, get involved. And for example, I was working a show about, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, and Jackie Fargo and Jerry Lawler was on the show at the time. It was in Mississippi, and we done. It was like a big horse arena, and I went out and I done my entrance and I danced all the way to the top of the building, and you know, it took about probably 7-8 minutes for the entrance. So when I got back to the locker room, Jack Fargo called me back then. He said, "Son, can I talk to you for a second?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He says, "I want to ask you," he says, "why did you take all that time and go all the way to the top of the building like you did?" And I said, "Well, sir," I says, "I've always taught, you know, that it doesn't matter if the people can afford a $200 ticket or if they can afford a $5 ticket. Make sure you have everybody, make sure you get everybody involved, and make sure they feel like they're involved in the show." And that's what I done. And Jack Fargo, that's what I want to hear. And that was probably one of the biggest accomplishments I can ever hear from anybody. for me getting that approval from him, I felt like I was doing my job.
Now, obviously, in the wrestling business, like you said, you were young at that point and everything, and there's always going to be rookies out there, young talent that is the next generation for things. On shows that you've been on the last couple of years, who do you think are some of the younger talents in the business that you've seen that you think are going to be the superstars in the next few years?
I like the Star Twins. They work for USA Championship Wrestling. They got the look. They got the attitude. And they have the psychology of what makes money and what don't make money. And they're getting you know, they're working the Southern style wrestling, and I know sometimes it's different from the Southern style to the North. But I think the Star Twins are really impressed me a whole lot. Matt and Nathan, I don't know if that rings a bell with you or not.
It does not.
Okay. And then there's a couple of them that they're coming out of Knoxville. I think coming out of I think Terry Morton's going to be really good. Ricky Morton's son, he's really impressive. But you got to go back and think, well, you know, who's training him? You know, who's working with him? So you know, his dad's one of the best, probably best sellers in the business. And I think it's what it takes. I think it takes still to this day an old school wrestler to train the younger guys. Because anybody can go to a wrestling school. Anybody can open up a wrestling school. If you got $500 in a backyard, somebody's trying to open up a wrestling school. But if you don't go to the right school and get trained by the right person, you just, you know, blowing your money. And I just think that sometimes the old saying goes, you know, you got to spend money to make money. And, you know, if you got to come out of your pocket and spend a little bit of money, go to the right school, then sooner or later you're gonna make the right money.
One of the things that people in the business can relate to is the fact that, especially on the independent level, the quality of rings can vary quite a bit. You have rings that are very nice to wrestle in, are not going to do too much damage to you, and then you have rings that are a bit more of a safety hazard, whether they're really hard surfaces or if the ropes are never tight enough or loose enough, if there's bad mats in the ring, things of that nature. What would you say was the worst actual ring that you had to wrestle in so far?
Oh. That would probably be a hard question to answer. There's been a couple of them. You know, I don't want to throw any names out there to discredit anybody or put somebody's company down. But what I like to do when I like to get to the building early anyway to set up gimmicks and stuff like that. And I always like to try to get in the ring and run the ropes or maybe take a bump or two. Just so if there is a bad board or a bad rope, I know where to go and where not to go. And I've been in a couple few, you know, rings that's been safety hazards. And that's why I usually just say, hey, I'm going to the floor. And I'll just rather take a bump on the floor because I know that floor ain't going nowhere. Here we go again. anybody that can open up a wrestling who can open up a wrestling company. So you just have to be really cautious of who you work for and check the credentials before you work for them or before you get trained by them. So you're exactly right. There have been a lot of rings out there that's got holes in them. It's got boards loose, got boards missing. The padding is not there, or they didn't tighten the turnbuckles up just right, and your top turnbuckle is completely way off than the middle turnbuckle, and when you go to hit it, you almost like being in a car wreck. So you're right. There has been a few bad rings out there. But like I said, I don't want to, you know, discredit no company or discredit anybody. So I'll just say, yeah, there's been quite a few bad rings.
I'm right there with you. I've been in some bad rings myself, so I know how that goes. Now, today in professional wrestling, we're lucky that a lot of promotions are now on national TV. We have Ring of Honor, AEW, Impact Wrestling, WWE, WOW, Women of Wrestling, all with major national television deals. And with the modern technology, with streaming, you can find wrestling in a lot of different ways and put it on your TV, whether it's YouTube or the Roku device or what have you. There's lots of ways to find televised wrestling. Obviously, you've been on a lot of TV shows in your career. What do you think is the difference as far as wrestling in front of just the local fans that come to the arena and wrestling on television?
Wrestling on television is a whole lot harder because you've got to know where that certain camera is. You got to know how to put your body, position your body at the right angle. If you want to get a certain point over, you got to make sure that you do it at the right time. Because on TV, you don't have but 5, 6, maybe 7 minutes to do what you need to do in reality. So everything that you want to get over and make the people believe what you're doing, you got just a small window to do it. When you're not wrestling in front of a TV, you know, they give you 15, 20 minutes to wrestle. So you got time to slow your pace down. As far as, you know, the AEW and I think they're doing really an awesome job right now, in my opinion. I think they're going back to old school. I think they're going back to trying to tell a story. If you notice, a lot of the guys that's up top on, you know, in the office, a lot of them are out there working first or second match and actually getting laid down, getting beat down. And I think that's says a lot. It shows a lot of respect and teaches the younger guys, hey, we've been around. If we can do it, you know, why can't y'all? And I think that AEW's got something really good going right now. They got good they got guys up there that know what they're doing, that knows how to make money. You know, you got Arn Anderson up there, probably one of the smartest guys in the business. You got the Rhodeses up there. You got Cody Rhodes and Dustin Rhodes. You know, look at their daddy. You know, he was probably one of the greatest guys, smartest guys in the business. How many people did their dad help? You know, in the business and smarten them up and told them, hey, this is what you need to do to make money. And I think Cody them's on something. I really do. As far as ROH goes, you know, I don't get to catch a lot of it, but you know, it looks like they're picking up a little bit. I worked there a couple of times when Adam Pearce was there, because I got to work Adam Pearce for the NWA World Title, and then a couple months later he went to ROH as a head writer, and I got to work there, and they treated me really well there, and I'm just really glad. that Adam got a job with WWE. It looks like that's what he wanted, and I'm really proud of a lot of the guys that's up there now. But the women wrestling, I don't get to catch a lot of that. But women are just important as to the business today as men are. You know, they're going out there and they're busting their hump every single night. Some of the women workers out there are a little bit better than some of the guys. You know, I really think that Charlotte Flair is probably one of the best women wrestlers today. She knows how to make everything look good. She lays everything in. It's solid. Becky Lynch, you know, she was one of the best ones up there. But as far as the wrestling today, if the young kid wanted to get into business today, he got all kind of choices to go. I just wish that was that many companies when I was coming up. When I was coming up, you didn't have it. You had Memphis TV, but it didn't go but what, 400 mile radius from Memphis. So, it wasn't no NXT. It wasn't no developmental deal when I was coming up. You had to go out there and travel around the world and get your name out there. And now, you go and when you work somewhere and less than 5 minutes, somebody's already know where you're at because Facebook, boom, or social media or Twitter. All you got to do is just put where you're at, and people already know where you're at that moment. 20, 30 years ago, you couldn't do that. You had to literally drive 5-6 hours to get your name out there. And I think the young guys have got it pretty well made right now because everything's at the tip of their fingertips.
I agree with you there for sure. Now, someone that we lost fairly recently is someone that was connected to pro wrestling as far as the TV portion of it went, that being Joe Pedicino. He hosted This Week in Wrestling, which covered all promotions, and he would talk about every promotion in an era when you didn't really talk about more than one promotion on TV. He was part of the Global Wrestling Federation on ESPN. He worked for WCW for a while. Did you have any relationship at all with Joe Pedicino at any point?
I ran into Joe Pedicino. I got to speak to Joe a couple of times. I worked for Global when Eddie Gilbert was the booker. I don't know if you remember that or not. But
yeah.
When Eddie took over Global in Dallas, we used to leave. We used to go to Dallas. It was me, a real good friend of mine, Ben Jordan, that became the lightweight champion for Global at one time. It was myself, Ben Jordan, Barry Horowitz would leave Nashville on a Friday, do Global TV on Friday night for Eddie Gilbert, and drive right back down and do Memphis TV Saturday morning. I haven't really didn't really get to know Joe, but when I did talk to him, he was super, super, super nice guy, well respectful guy, and he always put everybody over. I don't think I ever heard a bad word about anybody coming out of him.
I never heard one negative thing about him either in all the years I've been following wrestling. Now, one of the things that a lot of people realize about wrestling is it is physically hard to do, and one of the things that most wrestlers have to contend with in order to be able to do what they do is to maintain a diet that allows them to have the ability to wrestle for long periods of time, stay in good condition. Have you maintained any particular diets in your career to stay in ring shape, or is diet something that isn't necessarily a huge part of what you do?
Well, no, I try to diet all the time. I've never drank, never smoked, never done any illegal substance abuse. I was always scared of it. But I've tried to, you know, when you're on the road, when I was on the road with Barry Horowitz, we had to eat Subway every day. And if anybody knows Barry, they would probably agree to that. But I gained a little bit of weight over the last probably 3 or 4 years. But I was going to the gym every day, and I was working out every day and eating right. But I was just still gaining weight. And what I found out was my thyroid was completely shut off. And when they got that fixed, it got my metabolism back. And I've actually, over the last 4 months, I've actually dropped about 35 pounds. And because of, you know, you never know. You've always on the road. You never go to the doctor. You never get checked out. You know, you say, oh, everything will be okay. But I was getting sluggish. I was getting tired. I was where I couldn't really breathe in the ring. You know, I would go out and do my gimmick and dance in the crowd. And by the time I got in the ring, it was like, oh, my God, is the match over yet? And that's when I, you know, light bulb went off in my head and said, hey, you might want to go get checked out. And I got a little bit of blood work done, and they said, Gary, your thyroid just shut off. And when I got that fixed and got that leveled out, I'm telling you, I just purchased a new home, and first thing I done is I put a gym in my house. So, you have to maintain that diet, and you have to, because the old saying goes, and I've got this pushed in my head for years and years and years, and you've probably heard this too, and if you've never got trained and never got told this, then you didn't get trained by the right person. If you don't look like a wrestler, you're not going to be a wrestler. You know, you got to look like a wrestler. You know, if you go out there and you look like the average guy that's buying a ticket, then why is anybody coming to buy a ticket to see you?
Very good point. Now, we've heard stories in the last several years since wrestlers have been doing a little bit more open interviews with people and so forth about the ribs that go on in professional wrestling. It seems like it's a time-honored tradition in the business to rib while you're on the road. Did you ever encounter a lot of ribs when you were in dressing rooms?
Oh yeah, you know, I was in Memphis one time, and Greenhorn, a guy just came in the business and in the territory. He was probably there a week or so, and some of the boys said, "Hey, I think that girl over really likes you." And you got your ring rats and you got your girls that, you know, people that follow you everywhere you go. And the boys told her, they says, hey, I think she really likes you. You might want to ask her to go to the hotel. So after the show, he says, hey, I'm going to be at certain hotel. And she came back and told us that, hey, he's going to be there. So, and she got the room number and everything. Well, she went and met him, and about 15 minutes later, all the boys just went up and just started banging on the hotel door and said, hey, I know you're in there with a married woman. You better, if we get a hold of you, you're a dead man. And you should have seen that guy try to get out the bathroom window, you know. And just things like that, you know, nothing to hurt anybody, just to, scare him a little bit. I was in a hotel room with Barry Horowitz one night when Owen Hart called about 3:00 in the morning, and he had Barry on the phone for about 30-40 minutes. He was asking Barry, he says, hey, you know, what's your favorite move? Well, who's your favorite wrestler? Da 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 da. And I think Owen might have told him it was, you know, a magazine reporter or somebody, and he kept him on the phone, I bet you 35-40 minutes at 3:00 in the morning. And finally, the next morning, Owen told us, you know, it was him, and just stuff like that's just hilarious, you know, because, you know, Barry takes everything serious.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I know he also has some questions. I'm going to pass things along to him.
All right, yes, sir.
Well, thank you, Sangai. Hello, Mr. Valiant.
How you doing, sir?
Sir, I saw your YouTube video entitled Dustin 5 Star with Maria versus Boogie Woogie Boy, Gary Valiant, OWO. Do you remember where this video took place? My wrestling sources say that it may have taken place in Mississippi.
Yes. Yes, Mississippi it was. It should have been Ripley, Mississippi.
Oh, all right. And was it near Thanksgiving time?
I would have to go back and look. Probably so, or Christmas time. One to two, because I know at one time I think that I if it was one of the videos that you've seen, it was probably where I was giving Dustin a present or something and taking stuff out of a bag. Is that the one you've seen?
I you did take something out of a bag, yes.
Yeah.
It was in a ring that was red. A red ring, yes.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I worked five. That was probably if it was in a red ring, that was probably in EPW if I can remember that far. I think it was EPW. It was probably because I got a red canvas. That was probably in Corinth, Mississippi.
Actually, I am now, for the first time in Turnbuckle Turmoil history, I'm getting a text message, and it's saying that it took place in Armory, Mississippi. Armory.
Armory, Mississippi. Really?
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, okay.
Well,
yeah.
It was, well, we was close. It was in Mississippi somewhere, right?
Well, when you're on the road that much, places blur, just like rock stars. Sometimes rock stars will get on stage and they won't really know or remember where they are, and they'll greet the crowd and they'll say the wrong city to stun silence.
Right. Well, you know,
yes.
if it's not in front of you and you're not watching at the moment, you know, once you see it, you'll remember where you are. But you know, like you said, you know, when you travel so many places and you know, and I've been around Mississippi, you know, everywhere in Mississippi. And I apologize for saying the wrong city, wrong town there.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, now, earlier in the video, you picked out a little girl from the crowd and danced with her. My question is, during your career, did you ever have a girl or boy, well, and now a young man or young woman, tell you that since you asked them to dance that one time when they were little, that was the catalyst for them to become a wrestler? Did you ever have that happen?
Matter of fact, I did. There's a midget wrestler today. I can't remember his name right off, but he lives in Alabama. He came up and told me about 6 or 7 years ago when I done a show for Burt Prentice in Nashville. He says, I think his name's Kevin Wayne, if I ain't mistaken. Came up and told me, he says, hey, he says, I seen you at a show years ago, and you got me in the ring and danced with me. He said, that's what made me want to be a wrestler. And to be honest, that's what I do this for. You know, I get the kids in the ring with me and dance with me after each match. And, you know, they might not remember the match, but they'll remember getting in the ring, and they'll remember that for the rest of their life. And I felt like when I do that, then they have a memory that nobody else can ever erase from them.
Because I know in your area that you wrestled, you may have come across a midget wrestler named Shorty Shortstack or Little Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. Wow. Either of those two probably wasn't the one that was the influenced by your Yeah. Had you ever run into them before? Shorty Short Stack or Little Enigma?
Actually, Little Enigma is Kevin Wayne, right? Ain't his name Kevin Wayne?
Oh, okay. That I'm not sure of. I'm going to have to do my research.
Check on that and see if I'm not correct on that one.
Oh, okay. All right. Now,
he lives in Alabama, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, I think his name is Kevin. I might be wrong on that, but I think I'm right on it. But check that and see if I'm not right about that. Let him know.
All right.
He's from right outside of Athens, Alabama.
Wow. Okay. Well, Mr. Valiant, one of the seminal moments in wrestling history was when the midget wrestler Little Beaver got body splashed by King Kong Bundy. What's the biggest difference in weight in wrestlers that you have faced, the heaviest wrestler that body splashed you?
Yokozuna.
Oh, my gosh. That's harsh.
You can actually look it up on WWE when I was working on Scary Scott. But the coolest thing about that was we was in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I still remember today, Jeff Jarrett walks up to Yoko and says, "Hey, take care of this kid. He's a good kid." And Yoko just done a bonsai dropped on a guy the night before, because we was doing three nights of TV at the time. It was like Monday Night Raw, and then Heat, I think it was Sunday Night Heat, and then Wrestling Challenge and whatever. But then that, I think it was on a Tuesday night in Green Bay, and Yoko said, "Hey, do you mind taking a choke slam?" I said, "I'll take whatever you want to give me, sir." And I was so relieved that he didn't give me the big bonsai, but he shot me in the turnbuckle, and he came in and gave me the big splash, and then when I bounced out, he gave me the big, choke slam, sidewalk slam, whatever he gave me, and he was one of the biggest guys that ever splashed me.
Wow. Well, okay, Yokozuna and yourself and Little Beaver and King Kong Bundy, that's about the same weight differential.
Yes, I would. I might have got a little beaver by a little bit, but that was probably up there.
Wow. Okay. Oh, well, Mr. Valiant, in that match with Dustin Five Star and Maria, you entered the ring with a pink bag, and you pulled out a pair of white underwear and blue underwear. This got Five Star and Maria quite upset. Can you tell our listeners why this made them so upset?
Because I was given a Dustin Star a present, I think it was a birthday present is what it was, and he came out. Well, he was going to give Maria her birthday present, and I got the bag. And then at the end of the bag, what they didn't realize was there was a big old pair of triple C, or I'm talking, it was extra, extra, extra double large pair of panties. And I looked at Maria and I says, "These are yours." And she told Dustin, she says, "Get him and get him now." So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, the crowd seemed to like that a lot. Yes.
Yeah.
They were pretty much laughing. Yes, in the aisles. Okay.
And when you get the people laughing and you get them involved and you get them going, the more you can get them laughing and get involved, and the better, the easier the match goes, you know, because you've already got the people. Because the happier they are at the beginning, the madder they're going to get at the end when one of the guys gets screwed out or get screwed and get beat or whatever. And that just just makes the people want to buy a ticket to come back next week.
That's true, yes. Yes, and Dustin Five Star tried to screw you out of that victory with a foreign object. And
right.
But the referee found out, yes. Yes. Okay. Well, Mr. Valiant, at the 13-minute and 20-second mark, Maria pulled out some aerosol can that was in the bottom of a bag that said, and the bag said, Grizzly Den. Did you ever find out what that spray was?
I think it was hairspray.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Wow. Okay. Well, Mr. Valiant, were you a big fan of WWE superstar Carlito?
I was a fan of his work because his work was smooth. The only thing that didn't bother, the only thing that bothered me was him spitting apple because spit coming out of people's mouths and, you know, and that's one thing that I was never too enthused about was people spitting on you. But as far as his work, I thought his work was really good. And you got to admit, he came from one of the best wrestling families, and look at his dad, you know, but the only thing I didn't like about him, and it wasn't, you know, it's just his spitting. And I don't think anybody would really like to be spit on. So.
No, not in this day of COVID-19.
Right.
They probably
right.
didn't know that.
Right.
Yes. Okay. All right. That was one of my questions. I was going to ask you, how would you counter his apple spitting after he called you not cool? So I know the answer. Yes. Okay.
And you know, but you know, here we go again. You have to do what you're told to do, and you know, sometimes even on a real job, if somebody goes to a real job and they get asked to do something, and you know they don't want to do it, you know, you got like the Owen Hart deal, you know, coming out of the ceiling, you know, he really didn't want to do it, but he done it because he was getting paid. So to answer your question, you know, I would. If they wanted me to do it, I would, you know, they were the boss, they were the one paying me, and that's the way I see each and every promotion I work for. Whatever they want me to do, you know, they're the boss, they're paying me, so I'll do whatever they ask me to do.
Oh, okay. All right, very good. Okay. Well, Mr. Valiant, do you think you would have done better on Piper's – what format would you have done better on, Piper's Pit or Carlito's Cabana?
Probably Piper's Pit because I could probably say what I wanted to say, and you know how Piper was. Piper didn't give, you know, he didn't care what you done or how you what you said because he was the same way. And you could have probably been more honest and shoot a straight interview with Piper's Pit.
Did you ever have a chance to meet Mr. Piper?
No, I think Piper was already gone from the WWE when I went there. So I met him. I never got to work him, but I did meet him when they brought him to Crossfire in Nashville, and I got to speak to him. Just you know. Hey, how you doing? You know, just a few seconds. But as far as ever getting to sit down and talk to him and you know, talking to Bull with him, no, I never got to do that. But as far as meeting him, yeah, I did get to meet him. So that was one of the highlights of my career also.
Oh, okay. Did you ever get a chance to see his performance on TV on the comedy show It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
No, sir.
Oh, all right. You might want to watch Mr. Piper on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It's very good.
Okay, I'll check that out. I'll jot a note down right here and take a look at that.
Oh, very good. Okay. Yes, it's very funny. It'll make you laugh.
All right.
He's living out of his car, and he has a basket of, like, nuts in the back that he's living on.
Right. I think
yes.
I think the best thing he's ever said was, you know, I'm here to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and I'm out of bubble gum. And,
yes.
And I think a lot of people go by that these days.
yes. Yes, that was a movie that kind of foreshadowed the future. Yes.
Right.
Okay. Well, Gary, you had musical notes on your gear with that match with Dustin Five. Did the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, ever speak to you about your gear? Because he had musical notes on his megaphone.
No, matter of fact, Jimmy Hart, I've actually got managed by Jimmy Hart a couple of times. And I got music notes on my rain jacket. I got music notes on my boots. I got black boots with music notes on them. I was working for a company called Saw Wrestling. It was out of Nashville. A guy named Neil Hargrove, Reno Riggins, took over. It was actually called Southern All-Star Wrestling, and they was doing TV, and they changed it to Showtime. And Reno came up to me one time, and he says, hey, you might want to take the music notes off of your tights and change your name to just Boogie Woogie instead of Boogie Woogie Boy. And I think you're just too old to be called Boogie Woogie Boy. And I said, well, if you want me to change my name, I guess I don't need to work here no more. I says, because Shawn Michaels is still called the Heartbreak Kid. I says, your new champion over there is called Kid Cash. And I said, he's a little bit older than I am. And I said, so if I don't need to, if you don't want me to use Boogie Woogie Boy and use my music notes, then I can go elsewhere. And I stood behind that whole time. So.
Oh, very good. Well, you got to make a stand sometimes. Yes.
Right.
Okay. All right. Well, Gary, to your knowledge, is there a tag team out there that calls himself Boogie Woogie Man and Boy? Are you familiar with this?
No.
No, I'm
not. I know there was my dad had a kid that he trained up in Virginia. He was actually from Kentucky somewhere, and he moved to Virginia. But he tagged with my dad, and they called themselves Boogie Woogie Man and Boogie Woogie Kid. But my dad called me and asked me, would that be okay, because I was already booked up somewhere, and they wanted both of us together, and we both couldn't make it. But he called me and says, hey, would it be okay if we used Boogie Woogie Kid? And, you know, and I'm not going to tell him no, you know. So, but that's the only knowledge I got. As you know, Boogie Woogie Kid and Boogie Woogie Man. So,
okay, all right. Well, Mr. Valiant, were you recently inducted in the Pro Wrestling Elite Hall of Champions? My wrestling sources out of Shelton, Washington, said you were. Can you confirm this?
Where is that located? I know my dad was in the Hall of Fame and. New England, I think. But I got an induction to the Hall of Fame in UCW out of Kentucky a couple of years ago. But as far as the getting inducted anywhere else, no, I'm no knowledge to that.
Oh, okay. Now, it may have been in the Carolinas, but I got to confirm that.
That's probably my dad. That's probably Jimmy Valiant.
Oh, okay. Okay. I will research that, yes. Okay. All right. Well, now, would you say, do you have any sons or daughters that want to follow in your footsteps?
Well, I have a son he wrestled through high school, and then he wrestled through college, and then my ex-wife and I got divorced, and he moved in with his mom, and as you know, I haven't got to really see or speak to him, you know, since all this has been going on. So, but you know, I know he wanted to work at a gym or be a physical trainer, but he just told me he got tired of wrestling. So, but at one time, yeah, he wanted to do it when he was, you know, 13, 14 years old. Actually, when he got 18, I put him in a mask with the Wild Boys to try to trick them. I put my son and one of the Wild Boys' nephew under a hood, and while they was working them, I done the running on them. But and you know, he messed around in the ring with me, trained with me when I was training Saw Wrestling at one time, and when I was the trainer there. But as far as him following my footsteps, no, I don't have anybody wanting to do that. My daughter is wanting to be a psychiatrist. So I think she'd make more money doing that than she would being a wrestler.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Okay. Well, when I first started watching wrestling, it was Portland Wrestling on TV back in the late 70s. And one of the people that started out there was Jesse Ventura. Did you ever have a chance to meet Jesse Ventura?
No, I did not, but I watched a lot of Jesse's matches, and actually, if you go back, Jesse and Superstar Billy Graham and my dad and actually, you know, Hogan, if you look at all four of them guys, they pretty much almost got the same gimmick, you know, flamboyant, have all the ball of energy, you know, just got the charisma. And I think a lot of it is, and I was talking to somebody about this the other day, if you go back and you look at each and every wrestler, there's a wrestler that stole something from somebody as far as gimmick-wise, you know. If you look at, you know, Jesse the Body and Superstar Billy Graham, you know, it looked like they were buying each other's gimmick, and then, you know, then you know, my dad came in and had the bandana and had the charisma and all that. And then if you look at Hogan, Hogan almost mocked everything that Superstar Billy Graham and Jesse Dunn. You know, that from the bandana to the boas, and then at the end of Hogan's career, when he's at, I think, TNA, didn't he come out in, like, the tie-dye tights that looked like Superstar Billy Graham's, you know?
Yeah, I think he did, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, but, yeah, I got to watch a lot of his matches. And I wanted to be – I didn't want to be my dad. I just wanted to be half as good as my dad. But I wanted to watch – people that know, like Dusty Rhodes, you know. You know, he didn't have the greatest body in the world, but he got over. He got the people behind him. He had charisma. And I wanted to try to imitate anybody that can put the people in the palm of their hands. The more you can do that, the less bumps you have to take. And I remember Jerry Lawler told me one time, he says, kid, he says, your body's not like a car. Once you wreck your body, you can't trade it in. So make sure you take care of your body and you don't take all them crazy bumps. And he says, that's why you got to learn how to work. And if you think about it, if you go back and you look at all these wrestlers today, like my dad, he's still working. Jerry Lawler's still working. Bill Dundee is still working. Why? Because they took less bumps in a month than what some of these guys do in a night now. Some of these guys take 10, 15 crazy bumps a night, and are they going to be able to walk in 10 years? You know, it's not how to wreck your body to get these people to like to match. It's about what can you do to bring these people back the following week or, you know, the following month when you come back in that town or whatever. It's you know, because if you go out and you do all these crazy bumps off the top rope or all this and all that and try to do all these flips, and when you come back to following week or the following month, you want to do something a little bit more and a little bit bigger than what you've done last time. And then that means you're going to have to hurt your body a little bit worse. And the more you hurt your body, the less you're going to be able to tell a story because you ain't going to be able to walk.
Yes, the wrestling seems to take a toll, especially on the knees and the lower back.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
But because you're landing on your back all the time, you know, a hip toss, back drop, body slam, you're hitting the turnbuckles. You know, everything that you do, you're landing on your back. And people say, oh, wrestling's fake. Well, if it's fake, then why are we getting hurt? Why are all these guys getting hurt? And why are these guys getting crippled? You know, go back and look at a lot of the older guys, you know, like a lot of these guys are having hip replacements and back surgeries. Well, if it was fake, we wouldn't be having to have surgeries.
Oh, that's true. You don't have to convince me. But, well, Mr. Valiant, it was good talking with you. I hope you have good luck on your homework assignment to look up Roddy Piper on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And at this time, I'm turning it back over to Sign Guy.
All righty.
Thank you, QT. Well, Mr. Valiant, we have just a few minutes left on our show today, and I want to give that time to you. If there's anything you would like to say to the listeners, plug and promote anything you want, social medias, any scheduled appearances, merchandise, anything at all, floor is yours.
Yes, I just want to tell the fans out there or whoever's listening, I appreciate everything that y'all do because if it weren't for the fans buying the ticket, we wouldn't have a job that we enjoy doing. You know, and that's the thing about it. We got to make sure that we let the fans know how much we appreciate them because especially in days and times like this with all the coronavirus going on and, you know, some of us guys hasn't been able to work for 3 or 4 months because, social distance 6 foot apart. And now it's starting to open back up. And these people are coming out. And, you know, they're spending their hard-earned money to come out. But I just wanted to let them know that, you know, I'm going to be in Lebanon, Tennessee, coming up with USA Championship Wrestling. I'm going to be in McDonald, Tennessee, coming up Saturday night for CWA Wrestling. And then I'm heading back towards the Mississippi and Arkansas area coming up. And then I'm heading towards the Kentucky and Indiana area. I got that schedule coming up. And I'm starting to fill bookings up, till December now. So, but, I've always enjoyed seeing each and everybody out there. It doesn't matter what city, what state, what country you in. You know, we have something in common. We love the old saying, the old pro wrestling. And I just wanted to also throw out, I wanted to throw out a prayer and throw out a shout out to Tracy Smothers, the Wild Eye Southern Boy, and hope he gets better fighting cancer. And I just want to let him know that I'm thinking about him and praying for him. And if there's anybody out there that believes in the power of prayer, please say a prayer for Tracy. Tracy's one of the good guys in this business. But I also want to say thank you guys for taking the time and talking to me. It's always a pleasure and it's such a great honor to get to talk to you guys and let y'all know how I feel. And it's always a true blessing to get to talk to you guys. And because, you know, a lot of times that's the only way you get to get out to different people is get to do things like this. And I just want to say thank you guys so much. It's such an honor to get to talk to you guys.
Pleasure was definitely ours. I want to thank you again for taking the time out of your day to talk with us. Fans, we will be back with you next week. Next Friday afternoon, we have referee Wayne Silver out of the great state of Indiana. And then 1 week from today, we'll be back with you with Frogman LeBlanc. So make plans to be with us. Continue to be safe out there, and we'll talk to you.